is The Dial from Aspen Public Radio, in-depth conversations about current Roaring Fork Valley issues with the reporters who know them best. I'm Kristen Kay. It's June 30th. Do you ever have that feeling like you're being watched? Well, the thing is, you're kind of right, but in this case, you don't need to peer out into the woods behind your house. The insidious intruder who's watching your every move? Those are the same devices, your phone, your computer, that allow you to like that post from your cousin on Facebook about grandma's 80th birthday, or that let you watch funny animal videos when you need a little break from work. We're living in what's being called a surveillance economy. An unimaginable amount of personal data is being collected from our devices and then used to market products to us based on what our perceived preferences are. As we were talking about this in the newsroom, one person said, "I mean, I feel like it's so obvious. Of course that's how the internet makes money." So if it feels that inevitable that our data will be sold to companies or handed over to governments, what can you do, if anything, to protect your quickly eroding privacy? News director Carolyn Zachariasen attended two sessions at this year's Aspen Ideas Festival from the Reimagining the Internet track. We sat down to talk about what the panelists discussed about how our personal information is being used in this brave new world. Carolyn, what was the most important thing you can share with us?
Well, Kristen, I learned a lot about how vulnerable we are to having bad people use our personal data in a bad way. Virtually everything we do on our devices is being tracked, mostly by large companies so they can make money off of us. It's the new business model after the dot-com bust, the monetization of data, also known as surveillance capitalism. The panelists say we don't have a grip on the threat to our privacy at all. And what's worse, we really don't have a choice in the matter, they say. The average person has no idea how much information goes out into the abyss. We have never tracked people so effectively in the history of the world, is what I heard from those two sessions. Software engineers in these companies are collecting as much information as possible, and later they'll decide what to do with it, if anything, depending on the direction that their bosses tell them to go in. Julia Angwin, she's an investigative reporter for ProPublica and the author of a book on this subject, says we are giving these companies a blank check. The problem is that you are not sure how that data is going to come back to bite you.
What are some of the ways that it could?
Well, first, it should be noted that many people say, why should I care if Apple or Google has my information? I've got nothing to hide. That's great. But the panelists point out, what if you start getting tracked because of your beliefs? The government has, and can in the future, dip into people's dossiers or order companies to cough up your data. Make no mistake, this is big money, the panelists say. What if the information about you is being sold to the wrong people or it gets into the wrong hands, like scary regimes who, as a practice, put people in jail if they are dissenters? It really struck me in the audience, there was a young man who asked the panel if what his ethical responsibility is when owning the rights to his invention, which is a device that can track almost with 100% accuracy where another device is within under a mile radius. He could sell that to the wrong people easily. He already reportedly turned down an offer from the U.S. Navy for $125 million.
Wow. So what's being done about personal privacy and this kind of data collection?
Not much. That's why these panelists are shining a spotlight on the issue. Mm-hmm. Rebecca McKinnon, author of The Consent of the Networked, it's a book, and she's also a watchdog for this issue, says the problem is companies don't have any accountability and there's no transparency in collecting this data. So what's needed is full disclosure from companies and the government. They need to be clear on what they are using the information for, she says.
So what are some steps that individuals can take to protect their personal information while we're waiting for action from Washington, D.C.?
One's ability to deal with this is pretty limited. WNYC's Note to Self podcast was created to help people cope in the world of technology. It includes a 5-part plan to take back their digital privacy. Julia Angwin, again from ProPublica, says everyone needs a 30-character password. Just pick 5 words out of the dictionary and combine them, she says.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Turn off all your locations on your devices. You can use 2 or 3 browsers, spread the data around when you're on your computer. The panelists say don't be naive. In this era of Twitter, Instagram, etc., we are encouraged to share information, but ultimately it's up to us to determine where to draw the line. To hear the two sessions in full, go to our website.
So, Carolyn, tell me, what is really at stake here?
Well, privacy is important because it's a tool to keep our lives free of government control. You know, how important is it to protect your Fourth Amendment right? Think of it this way. Let's say we have another couple of elections which lead to a stronger government control over us, or dare I say a police state. What if you have posted or liked a video about the women's march and then you get targeted by authorities as a potential government dissenter? This has already happened in some form. Census information was used for the internment of Japanese Americans. And after 9/11, Muslims were targeted. So poor, vulnerable people are at risk here.
And that was just census information. I mean, right. Not even the technology we have today.
Exactly. So the panelists this week at Ideas Fest acknowledge that we are living in a creepy world. But not just because our data is not our own, but also because this model has the potential of dismantling democracy as we know it. I know it sounds dramatic, but it's real. And Julia Angwin explained that by actually shifting the way money is made online, we have actually defunded legitimate journalism and created propaganda journalism. And this lack of transparency and accountability from data collecting companies could easily translate into a turnkey totalitarian state, as Edward Snowden once suggested.
What are some examples of this breach in our personal privacies that we've seen recently?
Manoush Zomorodi, she's the creator of the Privacy Paradox experiment on WNYC's Note to Self podcast, told a story of one listener who said he found out a flashlight app he downloaded on his phone employed a microphone and a camera. So why does a flashlight need that? It's another example of bad actors taking your data to misuse it. And there's a Snapchat feature that knows where your personal what your personal address is and your location and your friends' locations. Apps have built-in back-end systems that turn on microphones so voice recognition systems can pick up conversations you have. So let's say you might mention to a friend on the phone that you want to buy a new car. Pretty soon, you'll see ads on your browsers or on your Facebook page for new cars.
I've seen stuff like that pop up, and I've wondered how they knew.
They are playing to our vulnerabilities, and sometimes in a bad way. Take this example. Zomorodi told a story of a listener who thought she might be having a drinking problem. So she Googled the subject. The next thing she knows, there are ads in her online sphere showing where the nearest liquor store is. A panelist described this online ad tracking as, quote, a terrible race to the bottom.
This is The Dial from Aspen Public Radio. That was news director Carolyn Zachariasen talking about the Aspen Ideas Festival conference this year and the track Reimagining the Internet. If you're interested in listening to sessions from the 2017 Aspen Ideas Festival, Aspen Public Radio is broadcasting live. You can check out that schedule or listen to the recorded talks by going to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Here's what else is going on in your valley. The U.S. Forest Service released a draft plan yesterday to combat overuse in the Maroon Bells Snowmass Wilderness. The first step is to address the Conundrum Valley. Phase one of the Forest Service's plan for overnight visitors involves a reservation system for the currently overrun Conundrum Hot Springs and along Conundrum Creek. Starting next summer, campers would have to book one of a limited number of campgrounds. And in Mid-Valley development news, Eagle County commissioners voted 2-1 to approve the tree farm project earlier this week. This ends a long, drawn-out, and frankly, bitter process for the 43-acre development across Highway 82 from Whole Foods. It will still be a while before ground is broken on the project, though. You've been listening to The Dial. I'm Kristen Kay. To hear more extended interviews or to listen to more local programs like Valley Roundup or Curated, go to aspenpublicradio.org.